Auto racing is dominated by men, although one of today's top stars is a woman, Danica Patrick. Janet Guthrie paved the way to the Indianapolis 500 in 1977, when she became the first woman to race in America's most famous car race. But nobody made it easy. The race traditionally begins with race director Tony Holman declaring, "Gentlemen, start your engines." And suddenly that just wouldn't do.
Well, he had threatened to go ahead and say, "Gentlemen, start your engines," because he said the mechanics start the engines and the force of tradition at Indianapolis is really major. But Kay Bignotti said, "We can't let him get away with this. I have a mechanics license. I'll start your engines." So Tony Holman, being the clever fox that he was, said, "In company with the first lady ever to qualify at Indianapolis, gentlemen, start your engines."
In company with the first lady ever to qualify at Indianapolis, gentlemen, start your engines.
Well, clever, and you sound like the kind of person who can let that fly as you put your foot down and started a race.
To be perfectly honest, I really could have cared less what he said as long as mine was one of the engines that started. I had come to feel it as something of a responsibility, however, and as a driver, you're not really listening to that. You're already focusing on the start of the race.
Of course, in order to be there, you had to have qualified for the race, and that's a lot of work, isn't it?
Back in the 1970s, as many as 90 cars were entered, and only the fastest 33 of all the cars that made qualifying attempts would start the race. So in the days of my contemporaries, A.J. Foyt, Johnny Rutherford, Mario Andretti, just putting a car in the field at Indianapolis was something that any driver could be proud of.
Yeah. So how fast did you have to go in those qualifying rounds to get up to be one of the top cars?
I'd have to look the numbers up, but at that time it was in the upper 180s, lower 190s.
That's very fast.
That's for a four-lap average, turns included. And at that time, we didn't really know how fast we were going down the straightaways. We didn't have all the telemetry they have nowadays.
But there had been, there was a lot of nasty stuff that went on around that race. There's a quote I have from the Boston Globe. They said you would delay the race by fishing in her 3-foot by 2-foot handbag for her keys while working on her eyelashes in the rearview mirror. That has to have gotten under your skin a little bit, didn't it?
Well, most of it I thought was funny. I had been brought up in a family where the boys and girls were both going to go to college. There was, if I wanted to fly airplanes, which I did, that was fine. There was just no issue about a woman couldn't do this or that. So some of what I encountered at Indianapolis came as a surprise.
Well, you talk about how some of this was funny, but some of it wasn't funny. I mean, some of the other drivers were pretty hateful. Richard Petty belittled you? I mean, there you are, driving 200 miles an hour with men who really don't want you there. That's a little scary.
Richard Petty was one of the fellows who did remain mired in the dark ages, but if you look at my website, you'll find a number of quotes from many other famous drivers who saw me for what I was, a very competent racing driver. Yeah. Nobody ever gave me a hard time on the racetrack. Well, once or twice, but nothing serious. Still, somebody would give me a little shove every now and then just to let me know they were there, and of course I would shove them back, and then that put a stop to that.
So there was that day, finally. You qualified. You'd been one of the fastest qualifiers in getting into the race in the first place. What was it like that day when you saw the checkered flag?
When I saw the checkered flag, I was so happy. We had had such trouble. My crew had just been fabulous, and to finish the race in the top 10 was a feeling I can't even describe.
I guess you could say you shattered the glass ceiling then in racing, and I understand that only 3 other women have qualified since then for the Indy 500. Is that right?
Yes, the next one was Lynn St. James. Then there was Sarah Fisher, who remains the woman with the best record at Indianapolis. She was the one who broke most of my old records, Sarah Fisher. Two poles, a second place finish, a third place finish. And more recently, of course, Danica Patrick, who at this point, I believe, has 4 fourth place finishes, including at Indianapolis.
Can you tell me what you think of Danica Patrick? Her image is certainly different from the one that you projected when you were racing.
She is certainly an extremely capable driver, and last year, of course, she demonstrated that quite well.
You're being very nice. She is a great driver, and I think everybody agrees with that. There is another part of her career that is very different. There's some, she's a sex symbol as well as a driver. Does that bother you at all? Is that what you broke the glass ceiling for?
No, I think Danica was ill-advised to do those photo shoots for the men's magazine. Danica is very young, and I think she will learn as she gets older. She's very capable. She's the first woman to come to Indianapolis with the full backing of a winning team, and I'm waiting for her to apologize to Sarah Fisher for some of the things she said early on and to recognize that there have been very good women drivers who preceded her also.
Now, before you started racing, you had done all kinds of things. You were a pilot. You have degrees in physics. You even tried out for NASA, didn't you, for the astronaut program?
I was working in the aerospace industry for Republic Aviation when the first scientist astronaut program was announced, and one of my coworkers said, "Look, you meet all these qualifications. Why don't you apply?" And I thought, oh, the great adventure of the 20th century. So I did apply, and I got through the first round of eliminations, but not the second.
That suggests there is a fair amount of adventure in your blood.
Yes, I think I was born that way. Born adventurous, grew up insufficiently socialized. That's what led to all this.
What's the most important piece of it for you? And I was looking at a line from the book. You talk, it's almost poetic the way you talk about the car, warming the car, stand on the gas, the engine unleashed, the machine leaps forward. It sounds to me as though for you it's not just speed. Or maybe it's that speed means more than going fast. I don't know.
It's a combination of things. It's a challenge that meets one's abilities. There's a wonderful book by Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi called Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience. And he describes the optimum experience in life as being the challenge where your abilities are adequate to meet the challenge and it's difficult. If it's too difficult, you'll be frustrated. If it's not difficult enough, you'll be bored. And you enter a state of flow. For me, the great reward was doing what I did on the racetrack, putting a car through the turns as fast as that car would go and passing somebody else in the process. You use 110% of what you're capable of, intellectually, emotionally, physically, and anything that demands that much of you enhances your life enormously.
So what's the fastest you've gone lately?
I set cruise control at the speed limit and grit my teeth.
Janet Guthrie's autobiography is called A Life at Full Throttle.